You know, I have been on this site so many times and I have never noticed that or thought that it was for someone like me. So I've been buying journal articles.
Your journal buying days are over because you have access to this fabulous database.
Well, confession time. I've been a member of BACP since I graduated in 2010.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was there.
Now you do.
Yeah, 16 years later. Welcome to Good Enough Counsellors, the podcast for growing a private practice without the pressure to be perfect. I'm Josephine Hughes, counsellor and creator of Therapy Growth Group, helping you get the clients you want and create the practice of your dreams. One of the things that I encourage my members of Therapy Growth Group to do is to make the most of networking opportunities. And that word networking can fill us with dread, especially if you're quite an introvert. So I'd like to reframe it and share it as being a series of interesting conversations, because you never know who you're going to meet when you network. And recently I had the opportunity to do this when I attended the BACP Children, Young People and Families Conference, and I met up with people I know and also met lots of people who I didn't know. And I thought it would be fun today to share some of the conversations I had on the basis that you'd probably find them really helpful and interesting too. And that's what I'm sharing with you today. Now, I know that you as therapists, you're not only interested in your online CPD and your face-to-face CPD and conferences, you spend quite a lot of time with your nose in a book as well. So I thought it'd be interesting to find out what books people are currently reading. So listen in to hear what's popular at the moment. And your name is?
Katie Moffat.
Oh, hi, Katie. So you're a therapist by training?
Yes, I am indeed. And I am also working for PCCS Books Publisher, as in my previous life, I worked in publishing for many years as well.
Oh, wow. So doing both.
You're doing probably both. It's a hybrid.
Yeah. Yes. So do you sort of help them knowing what's relevant and that sort of stuff?
It comes in useful when we get manuscripts in to have a read through and see what the contents are and whether it resonates for counsellors and whether it resonates for what's happening within the world of psychotherapy at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. So I thought I'd ask you about what's going down well at the moment. What are your books that you're sort of like, she says leaning on a book, I better stop that. Tell me about some of your books.
Of course. Well, I'm going to start with Janine. Janine Connor is the keynote here at the BACP Children, Young People and Families Conference. And so we published two of Janine's books. The first one we published was Stop Something Nodding.
Yep, Stop Something Nodding.
Yes,
yep.
And the other one is You're Not My Mother.
Yeah.
Janine's actually around today. She did the keynote, and so it's great to be supporting that. And we are selling those like hotcakes, to be fair. And she's signing copies as well.
Oh, I didn't realise I would have brought my copies with me.
She's
hopefully she'll appear at some point.
Appear.
Yeah.
Things that are selling really well at the moment for us are, we published a while back a book titled On Being an Autistic Therapist, which was edited by Max Morrow. That has proved incredibly popular.
And so that's lots of different therapists talking about their experience
indeed,
of being autistic.
It's different chapters and different, I think there's 23 chapters, and it's therapists exactly that, talking about their experiences as autistic therapists.
Yeah, I should have bought that one as well.
We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Something we published last year is the Black Women Trauma and Therapy, edited by Helen P. George. Again, that has proved incredibly popular. And we're actually publishing later in a couple of months Black Men Trauma and Therapy.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
That with Dwight. So again, really looking forward to that publication coming forward. And also just next to it is something we published probably about 9 months ago, maybe longer actually, Body Listening by Tim Brown. And whenever that appears at bookstalls and people pick it up, and it always sells out.
Yeah.
So it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, it's not a very big pile, is it?
No, it's not. It's already gone down.
Lovely to see them all.
Yeah, well,
and I've got my little copy of What Did I Buy? Therapist Challenging Racism and Depression, which looks really good as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And now I'm going to tell you about something that blew my tiny little mind. as you'll hear in the interview. I don't know about you, but whenever I want to read a research paper, it really is quite difficult. If you haven't got an academic library that you can call on, it can be quite difficult if you're wanting to read a particular piece of research. Did you know that this is actually available to you if you're a BACP member? I don't know whether any of the other big counselling memberships do this. It really is worth asking them, because this is the most fantastic resource, especially if you're somebody who's doing a piece of research, a dissertation, or just simply you need to know more about a particular area.
I'm Suze Lyle, and I'm here from a company called EBSCO Information Services, and we partner with the BACP to make sure that all members of the BACP have access to a gold standard database called Psychology and Behavioural Sciences Collection. So this is a repository of hundreds of really high quality psychology journals, and we also provide the BACP with access to the software which the journals can be searched upon. Mm-hmm. So it's a benefit of membership, and if you ever want to find it, head to the BACP website, log in, and then on the top of the page look for events and resources. Mm-hmm. Then you can scroll down to research resources.
You know, I have been on this site so many times and I have never noticed that or thought that it was for someone like me. So I've been buying journal articles.
Your journal buying days are over because you have access to this fabulous database. So once you're on the research page, scroll down until you see EBSCO Information Services.
Right. Yeah.
Now, just to explain what Discovery is, think of it like Google. Mm-hmm. In terms of, it's got a very simple Google-like search, but it's not searching the internet. It's only searching the clinical evidence base so that you can be assured that what's coming back is bona fide.
It's high-quality journals, exactly. Basically, peer-reviewed sort of journals, yeah. Should we try out a search? Yeah. So should we do something about gender-affirming therapy for transgender people? Yeah, it's coming up, isn't it? There we go.
And it's come back with far too many results.
44,000. But we could narrow it down.
We filter it down. Yeah. You can filter it down by date of publication. Mm. You can filter it down by where the publication was published. So UK only resources and so on. So it's a fantastic resource for BACP members. So go and check it out. We are really encouraging everybody to use it as much as they can.
Well, confession time. I've been a member of BACP since I graduated in 2010.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was there.
Now you do.
Yeah, 16 years later. Thank you so much.
You're really welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
That database is a brilliant resource if you're doing some research. But also, let's face it, conferences aren't just about the academic side. They're also about listening to other practitioners who perhaps have some expertise in a particular area. So this next interview is with Kel O'Neill, who came to the conference to talk about social media and the impact on young people in terms of their body image and eating disorders. So I thought you'd like to catch a little bit of what Kel had to say. So I'm here now with Kel O'Neill, who some of you will know works with eating disorders. And Kel, tell us why you're here today.
Well, I'm here today because I've been asked to speak this afternoon. I have a session titled Unreal Standards, Real Harm in Relation to Eating Disorders and Social Media. And I predominantly work with young people, emerging adulthood kind of range of folks, which for whom obviously the social media side of things is very important.
Mm.
So here we are talking about that and hopefully giving some of my practical tools on navigating that, particularly with folks with eating disorders.
I was going to say, because it's just such an influence, you know, the sort of Instagram type of stuff for young, I suppose young women in particular, but I imagine boys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Across the board. I wanted to say across the spectrum then, but across the board maybe is more appropriate. And I think particularly there's been a lot of conversations the last few years related to banning eating disorder type content on social media. Mm. And some of the platforms do heavily limit the availability of access to things with, for example, hashtag eating disorders, which wonderfully comes up with Beats, the eating disorder charity, if you try to search for it. But also, the internet's a great place for knowledge, so I don't know if I'm quite on board with totally banning it.
Yeah.
But maybe it's about teaching people to navigate these spaces in more critical ways.
Yeah.
So that they can access what's helpful for them and learn to filter out what's harmful, just like we have to do out here in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really interesting conversation to have, isn't it? All about harm. And I was just talking to Janine and she was saying that she said, you know, an 8-year-old kid might be able to navigate it, but a 25-year-old kid might not be able to navigate it. It does depend on the individual, which I thought was an interesting point to make. Well, Kel, thanks so much for coming over and having a chat.
No problem.
Yeah. Look forward to speaking some more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think what this conversation with Kel really shows is how complex the arena is for young people to be navigating these sorts of issues. And I know one of the conversations that quite often comes up in my Good Enough Counsellors group is, do I need to have specialist training to work with young people? So it was really nice to meet people from Place to Be, and they described their training, which I thought might be interesting to some of you who perhaps are thinking about moving into children's work.
My name's Kelly Swain Cooper, and I'm the head of our clinical curriculum at Place to Be.
Yeah. Well, it's really nice to meet you now. We had a really interesting chat at lunchtime, didn't we? All about the training that you do. Tell us a bit about the training, because lots of people say, do I need to have specialist training to work with children and young people?
That's how we developed our trainings, because people wanted to learn how to work with children and young people, and there weren't any training. So we have a whole suite of trainings, and from that, we then developed the ability to train people from no qualification all the way through to qualification,
right,
as well as translate their skills from adult counselling to working with children.
Yeah.
And then we now have a training for clinical supervisors as well.
Yeah, so that really helped people who are working with other children and young people. Yeah.
Our clinical supervision courses for adult trained counsellors and child counsellors.
Yeah.
But yes, the level 5 really is for adult trained counsellors who want to
sort of transition.
Just transition to working with children and young people and want that little bit of extra support.
Yeah.
Working experientially, maybe working with nonverbal communication, and just getting that forum to learn with other people as well. So lots of our learning is experiential and reflection based, and conversation with your colleagues who are going through similar experiences.
Because we had a really sort of interesting chat at lunchtime, didn't we? Tell me what you said about working with adults.
For me, working with adults, it's a lot of verbal narrative and verbal content. And I'm quite finely tuned to also feeling lots in my body, being very visually sensitive and sensory sensitive. So when I have to concentrate on all of that verbal content, as well as all those things, I find the adult work can be quite overstimulating. Whereas I'm much, much, I think more, it's more in keeping with the who-ness of who I am to really work with children and young people who use all of those modes to communicate.
Yeah. Well, I take my hat off to you, because as I said, children's counselling was not something that I was particularly skilled at, but it's so good that there's available, you know, there is special training available, and, you know, people like yourself who love doing it, because it's, you know, we've all got a place, and it's just so helpful that children have got access to people like yourselves, I think. Yeah. Oh, thanks so much. It's lovely to hear about it. Lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was absolutely fascinated by what Kelly had to say about her way of working with children and absorbing all those different streams of information. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that sometimes working with children is, or can be, different to working with adults. But I'd love to introduce you to Ellie Finch now, because Ellie has developed a creative resource, but she not only uses it with children, but also with neurodivergent adults as well. So I'd love to introduce you to Ellie and the work she's doing with creative digital tools.
I'm Ellie Finch. I'm a counsellor and a social worker and clinical supervisor, and I'm also founder and director of Playmode Academy, which is a non-profit that provides training to practitioners on using creative digital tools, like video games like Minecraft, popular video games, but also digital sound trays and other digital tools you can...
I can see you're really excited about it.
Yeah, I am excited about creative digital tools.
It's fantastic. We need people to come up with ideas like this. So you actually train people in work, sort of like in working with children and working with the digital tools. Is that what you mean?
So it came out of my own practice. Mm. So when COVID hit in 2020, I was in a young person's counselling service in person.
Yeah.
We all moved online all of a sudden. Suddenly we're in little boxes and it was not very engaging.
Yeah.
And actually I had the idea way back because I was doing some research in the area of engaging children in online mental health services back in 2012. And Minecraft had just come out around that time.
Right, yeah.
A few years old, playing it with my nieces and nephews. And it made sense to me that Minecraft was this potential amazing therapeutic tool.
Yeah.
But I didn't start using it until 2020 because it became actually a necessity to provide something engaging, an engaging space to be in rather than just in little boxes on your video call platform.
Yeah. Does it sort of appeal to all types of children or is it only some types of children?
I mean, it's it's a very popular game. Mm. So it's considered the most popular game of all time.
Yeah.
It has over 204 million monthly players.
Wow.
And Minecraft's so popular with children, young people and adults, in fact. Adults equally, if not more, popular with adults.
You
Minecraft.
Can use that as
So I work with couples in Minecraft.
Oh, really?
And especially neurodivergent young people and adults. So there might be a couple where one or both of them are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
And it's this, they can see that they come to me going, can we use Minecraft? Because it will
really help us
to communicate.
Yeah, so, fantastic.
Encouraging communication within families as well, so my family work as well. So I just had an academic paper published about using Minecraft in family therapy.
Wow,
yeah.
Amazing. So sort of bringing in all these sort of different strands of your life, sort of social work, counselling, having nieces and nephews, all this sort of stuff. Did you have to sort of like get a commercial licence from Minecraft to do it?
You do, or? You can. You can get, Minecraft Education has commercial licences that you can buy as therapists, as parents as well. It's available for people who are homeschool, who might want to use the education elements of it. But obviously I'm saying, hey, this could actually be used as a therapy tool as well, not just an educational tool.
Yeah.
And I've actually made a Soundtray therapy world in Minecraft.
Oh, wow.
So you can go and it looks like a Soundtray therapy room with a Soundtray and shelves with items on that you can pull down and make scenes with.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. It sounds like a really creative thing to do, actually.
I mean, it's
creative for you to create.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it, obviously. I've been doing this for quite a while now and I just love sharing the work with other practitioners. Because I know that people are a bit tentative about video games. If you don't play them yourself, you can feel really like, oh, is that a space that I'm allowed in?
Yeah.
And I would say, like, although I gamed a lot when I was a kid, and this is why it kind of is quite meaningful for me, because I think I neurodivergent young person experiencing social anxiety, didn't go out, didn't access counselling, so just didn't find it accessible.
Mm.
If I had been able to use video games,
you think you might have been able to use it.
I think I might have been able to access therapy.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's really important to try and help people who might be tentative about using video games. I'm not an amazing gamer in any way, shape, or form.
So how do people get in touch with you? Because I think people want to know.
Okay. Yeah. So there's the playmodeacademy.org website.
Right. Yeah.
And if you go on there, you can subscribe to my newsletter, and so you get a monthly newsletter. You get 20% off my self-paced trainings and free digital resources, including a resource I've made called a Fear Responses in Minecraft Creatures. So so it's sort of...
Like scary monsters, that sort of stuff?
Like flight, freeze with the Minecraft creatures that might represent those states.
Yeah, so really fun.
And so playmedacademy.org website has all my trainings, lots of free resources on there. Just kind of contact me and ask any questions.
That's right. Well, Ellie, what I'll do is I'll put it in the show notes as well, so people will be able to see the link in the show
notes. Thank you.
So lovely to meet you.
You too.
Good luck as you continue, and it's in, I think you said you had an article published as well.
Is that
in the BACP?
That's the Journal of Family Therapy. That's an academic paper that we've just had published.
Yeah.
Took 3 years of peer reviews and redoing it. So, labour of love getting that published.
And as you know, my focus in terms of my Therapy Growth Group membership is helping people with their private practice. So I had to grab Eric from Write Up to talk to me about Write Up, especially as I've been seeing quite a few people discussing practice management systems. And judging by the queues of people who were waiting to chat with the two people who were exhibiting on the stall. This is a resource that people are really interested in. So Eric did a very quick interview with me to introduce WriteUp and how it works. I'm here at the CYPF conference and I'm talking to Eric from WriteUp. Hello, Eric.
Hi there, nice to meet you.
And you, what a lovely accent. Where are you from?
I'm Canadian. I'm based out of Toronto, but originally from Montreal.
Wow, because it's difficult for someone from the UK to know the difference between a Canadian and a US accent.
I like to kid around that we're much happier people.
Yeah. So tell us a bit, you know, people are always asking, how can I make life easier? So tell us a bit how WriteUp makes therapists' life easier.
Well, if you think about running your operations, right, I like to remind people that any practitioner who went to school for a very long time always did it to help a human at the end of the day, right? When you go to school, it's to either provide a service, provide education and support. And there's very little business or IT education as part of that training. And that's where we come in. We try and make your life as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. So from, if you think about anything you need from a commercial operation, whether that be diary management, patient files in a secure manner, appointment reminders, all the way to a potentially online booking or payments or invoicing, all that stuff can be done really easily in WriteUp. I would say on average, and this is feedback from our users, they say that they will save on average 5 to 12 hours a week.
Wow. That's a lot of time.
That's a lot of time, right? Yeah. If you think about it. So let's say if you were to save 10 hours a week, what would you do with that time? Yeah. So would you spend more time with your family? Would you see a couple more patients? That's a lot, right? So
it's a lot of time, isn't it? And spend time on your marketing as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? If you're spending all that time doing admin work, you're not spending time growing your practice. Yeah. So less time on marketing, less time on the fun stuff that you want to be doing.
Yeah. So can we talk a bit about security? Because I know this is something that people are really scared about. You know, the thought of, oh, God, you know, what's going to happen to my clients' notes and data if I use WriteUp?
That's a great question. So it's important to see that everything that we do is fully GDPR compliant. Mm-hmm. So your data will never leave what's called the extended European area. Mm. So it's fully GDPR compliant. All your data will stay here fully secure. In over 15 years of operations, we've never had any issues. Mm-hmm. And we help you make it secure, right? Mm. As I was sharing earlier, I've met people who keep notes on their iPhone. Well, most of that gets backed up to California, which makes you non-compliant, right? People don't think about that sort of stuff. So on our end, we make it simple for you. We make it very secure, and there's no breach or anything like that. One other thing I'd like to mention is it's important to do a bit of research. Some competitors will actually anonymize your data and then sell it off to either research firms or insurance companies. Yeah. We don't do any of that. Yeah. So for us, it is your data. We're the custodian of your data. We'll protect it. But if you're one day you say, I'm done with WriteUp, you can hit a button, download all of your stuff. It's yours. You get to take away.
Yeah.
And we have to delete it on our end.
Yeah. So it's all sort of like follows all the necessary rules. And I think the other thing that people are thinking about, people who I work with, is sort of online payments can be quite scary as well. So how does that work?
So we actually partner with the single largest provider in the world. So our back end is done by Stripe, which is the single largest provider, technically based out of Ireland. And you can fully integrate your payments. So you can do back transfer. You can do SEPA if you're in the rest of the EU. You can take cards, credit cards, or anything like that. So you, as part of online booking portal, you can ask your clients to pay the session ahead of time, or you can send them a payment link. So it's quite easy to use. Again, fully secure. The funds will be deposited in your accounts within 3 days.
Yep, brilliant. Thanks so much, Eric. It's been really nice to meet you. So there we are, just a few of the conversations that I had at the BACP Children, Young People and Families Conference. There were other people who I spoke to who I didn't actually record, but it was lovely to be able to network with them. And if you're someone who sometimes feels a bit shy about networking, or perhaps you don't want to network, but you've got sort of other ideas about how you'd like to promote your practice. At the moment in Therapy Growth Group, we have 3 streams running in my Action Steps program. We've got people who are blogging, people who are using social media, and other people who are networking. So there's plenty of opportunity for you to try out things that you'd like to experiment with. And there's lots of resources inside Therapy Growth Group and support to help you move your practice forward. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to these little snippets of interviews. Watch out for me at other conferences with my phone and my microphone foam cover. I might grab you for an interview as well. But I'd love to know, have you enjoyed this episode? Has it been interesting? Do drop me a line and let me know. And all the links to what I've been talking about today are in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. And I will see you next week, where we're going to have another practitioner interview. Bye for now. Thanks for listening. Do come and join my Facebook community, Good Enough Counsellors. And for more information about how I can help you develop your private practice, please visit my website, josephinehughes.com. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love it if you could share it with a fellow therapist or leave a review on your podcast app. And in closing, I'd love to remind you that every single step you make gets you closer to your dream. I really believe you can do it.